Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and on the podcast as well if you're listening either on the 810 WHB app or on Spotify or on iTunes or any of the other places you can get your podcast. We appreciate you listening today. This is Nate Bucati along with, as always, the one and only Carter Augustine. What's up, Carter? How are you, man?
What's up, Nate? Where are we? What time zone are we in?
We are at Pinnacle. We're back
we
at the plush Sporting Kansas City training facility. As this is where we're going to do the show from more often than not this year, unless we're gallivanting across the country like we did down in Panama last week, because we're going to be able to sit down with different members of the Sporting Kansas City family. In fact, why don't we use that opportunity right now to lay out the menu for us here today. As coming up on the show, we plan to be joined by Roger Espinoza, who, of course, was with us on that international journey through Mexico, L.A., and Panama. He played in Panama against Independiente, and we'll talk about that match and preview the big match coming up on Thursday against Independiente as the team that wins on aggregate through that series will move on to the semifinals of the CONCACAF Champions League. We're also going to talk to, and I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation, to one of the members of the technical staff for Sporting Kansas City. You probably hear him referenced quite a bit by the players and other folks when you hear them talking about the team, but Director of Sports Performance and Science Mateus Manuel will join us as well on the show. So we're going to maybe hear about how he got to Sporting Kansas City. His origin story is a really interesting one.
Very cool.
From volunteering on the staff for DC United early on in his career to being with the U.S. men's national team on hand to see Landon Donovan's goal in South Africa as a part of that staff and now here at SKC. So it's going to be fun to talk to him as well. So that's all coming up on the show. But we got a lot to get to, Carter, because we have a lot of news as well. We've got a result to break down from the weekend in which Sporting Kansas City got a 2-0 victory over the Philadelphia Union. Some milestones in that game, like the youngest player to ever make a start on the grounds at Children's Mercy Park in the form of Gianluca Abbuccio. More superlatives from Tim Melia and his otherworldly ability to stop penalties. We'll talk about that. We've got some national team call-ups as well. As earlier today, it was announced that Johnny Russell will be joining the Scottish national team for their Euro 2020 qualifiers. And Botan Barat and Christian Namath called in to the Hungarian national team as well. Could be more Sporting Kansas City players as well as the week wears on, but those are the three that we know of so far. So we've got news there. And we had a news conference yesterday as well, Carter, as a person who's been on the radar of the U.S. men's national team in the past. In fact, has even, I believe, if I remember correctly, has had an appearance or two with the U.S. men's national team, signed by Sporting Kansas City. It had been long reported and then made official yesterday that Gideon Zelalem is now a member of Sporting KC. He's been in the Arsenal organization, loaned out a couple of times and all that, but he's been with Arsenal since his days as a teenager. But at 22 years old, Sporting Kansas City bringing a pretty recognizable name on the U.S. front.
Yeah, I think you could tell that this is a kid that a lot of U.S. soccer fans have been paying attention to for a long time. It was a very hyped signing. U.S. fans have been curious as to what his next move would be, as it kind of seemed like, you know, after these injuries he's had at Arsenal, it's just going to be time for him to move on and try and kick on somewhere else. And, yeah, very, very exciting signing. Still just 22 years old. That's what's the craziest part about it. As you mentioned, he's gotten in with the U-20s, with the U-23s, and I think this is a kid that has long been hyped. I mean, he's been in the news for years, since he was 16 or so, when he first went over, got scouted by Danny Carbassion, and who of course was an American that had gone to Arsenal before. In the past, he went over there with Cesc Fabregas and wound up being a scout for Arsenal. Finds this kid playing for. Have you heard the players that played with Zelalem in his youth team?
No.
Jeremy Obobese,
yeah.
Carter Manley. gosh, I'm blanking on a couple. There's one other MLS player, and then a guy that's playing in Israel as well that I think might be coming back to MLS. That must have been just an unbelievable youth team over in the D.C. area. But, yeah, this kid still just 22 years old, and this is a very – very exciting signing. It might take him a little time to get into what is a fantastic midfield for Sporting Kansas City, but he seems to have the goods, and hopefully he can kick on here.
Yeah, 10 appearances with the U-20s, 5 appearances with the U-23s, no appearances yet with the senior national team. And as you said, he's kind of got to restart his career a little bit with the injuries that he's had and a couple of kind of failed loan spells as well. But he says he's back and physically fit. You mentioned Obobese being one of the guys that he talked to. And at the news conference yesterday, one of the things that Zelenin mentioned in terms of why he was excited to come here was conversations he had with players like Obobese about the current state of MLS.
Like a lot of players, believe it or not, like they're excited by the MLS. You know, a lot more players want to come to the league. You know, a few players have given me messages, all like I might come to the league next year, this stuff like that. So I don't think that perception was there 3-4 years ago, but nowadays, like it's a respected league for sure.
Why MLS and why now at this point in your career?
Like I said, that the league is growing. I'm American, you know. It's good to be home, living in America. So, yeah, so all those.
What are your first impressions of Kansas City just the past 24 hours or so?
I mean, it's cold. Nah, but the stadium and the training ground is, like, unbelievable. You know, I can compare it to Arsenal's training ground. I mean, the facilities are unbelievable.
And there you hear Gideon Zelalem also talking about the climate here a little bit. He was asked about Kansas City, and he said, well, his first impressions are it's cold. It's cold now. He might also find out that it's really, really hot here in the summertime as well. He's going to get to experience all of the different elements that that we have here, the four seasons of the Midwest. But like you said, Carter, look, this is a good situation for Sporting. Because he doesn't have to come in and play. There's no expectations on him right now. It's about what he can work his way into. But you could tell from Peter Vermees talking yesterday as well that if he can get up to speed, there is a use for him, particularly in terms of depth in the central midfield part for this team this year.
Yeah, he pointed out that he thinks Zelalem can play all three positions in midfield. It was interesting to me that he himself, the player, was asked where he sees himself fitting in, and he likes more the two forward positions. Sometimes you feel like Gutierrez and Espinoza are almost like two eights that play together. Obviously, you can go with an eight and a ten at times, but he said he kind of feels himself into one of those positions. But he saw time as the six with the U.S. Youth national teams, and I think it was really interesting that Peter already highlighted that this is a guy that can play in all three midfield roles, and that might help him get on the pitch. As we know, they've played a ton of games already, got Open Cup coming up as well. There's a lot of games to go around. So, it's an exciting prospect, and there's a reason why Arsenal picked him up at such a young age, so good on the ball. I think this is just a really exciting signing. So, you know, you wish all the best for him. It was funny hearing his little London accent coming out at times, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and, you know, interesting because he's originally from Germany, then moved to the United States, so he might have a little bit of German in there. He's got a little bit of London accent as well, but he is an American. And let's hear real quick from Peter Vermees, as Carter touched on, what he's expecting from Zelalem now that he's in Kansas City.
As you guys know, when we recruit players to come into the club, we do it because we think that they have the qualities that fit the way that we play, and there's no doubt in our mind that he has those qualities. He can play any of the three positions in the middle of the park, and probably even play a little bit out wide if had to, but you know, his strengths are in the middle of the park, in one of the three midfielder positions, which is something that is important to us because it's an area that we've been wanting to add another player to. And especially with somebody who has the quality to be able to play all three positions, which is great.
So, yeah, Carter, interesting stuff. And I think that the main theme for a lot of us is this is low risk for Sporting Kansas City, potentially incredibly high reward.
Yeah, low risk, high reward. That's spot on. If he pans out the way that his potential is, then it's going to be a very high reward. And we've got an interview with Zelalem on the television broadcast this weekend at the game against the Rapids. So make sure to check that out. one thing that he talked about was the discovery rights rule. And despite him, you know, growing up in the U.S. and knowing a little bit about MLS, he said he had no idea what the discovery rights rule was. It's one of the quirkier rules, I think, in Major League mm-hmm. Soccer. But you alluded to it. He talked to Obobese pretty much after it was made known to him that Sporting Kansas City has his discovery rights. So for him to do the research after that and be very interested in SKC and the way that Sporting play, he probably could have gone to other places in Europe. Obviously, this would have been his only opportunity in MLS, but it sounds like he's really excited by Vermeer's system, how he could possibly fit in, and this is kind of a fresh start for him after some tough injuries.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how things pan out for the newest member of Sporting Kansas City, Gideon Zalalem. And as Carter said, Carter had a sit-down interview with the newest Sporting KC player. We'll be on television on Fox Sports Kansas City on Sunday when Sporting get back into MLS play. 8 o'clock Central Time kickoff between Sporting KC and the Colorado Rapids. Of course, our pregame coverage will begin at 7:30 for that one as well. So make sure you tune in and catch that sit-down interview between Carter and Gideon Zalalem as well. Now, I mentioned also, Carter, 2-0 victory over the Philadelphia Union on Sunday. What were the key takeaways for you as Sporting got their first win of league play?
I don't know about you, but I think this is something that they showed at times last year, and that's even if they're not clicking on all cylinders, that's not the phrase, but I guess firing all cylinders, even if they're not, at their best, they find ways to win games, and I think that's qualities of a really good side, and that's what I thought they were this past weekend. Wasn't the most exciting game that you'll see. Mm-hmm. But you get Ilya converting the penalty and Tim Ilya. I mean, how good is this guy? It's just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. And that was probably the biggest moment in the game, because if they level the score 1-1, it's a whole different second half. And he just comes up big to stonewall Marco Fabian. And that's just a huge moment. And he's kept them with the lead. And once Fabian got ejected, it kind of seemed like Philadelphia ran out of steam, didn't it?
It certainly did, and I think that the denial of the penalty was really the biggest key moment of the game. As you said, Tim Melia has saved 8 of 18 penalties that he's faced since the start of 2016. That's 3 more than any other goalkeeper in the league. By the way, he's faced more penalties than most of those other people as well, facing those 18, but boy, it sure, you have to wonder if it's in the head of the opponents when they walk up there, if maybe they're questioning themselves a little bit, just knowing that Tim Melia is standing there in between the sticks.
You would think so, because it doesn't seem to matter where they shoot the ball. He saves a left, right, and yeah. center. And this one was interesting, as Matt Lawrence pointed out on the broadcast, Fabian had taken a penalty and gone the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And so
just the week before.
And so Melia decided and read the situation and playing the mind games. He's able to go to his right and flip it from what Fabian had already previously done. And he still saves it. So, you know, this story of Tim Melia is just remarkable. And you see the U.S. keepers that got called into the U.S. squad. And it's just a huge shame, I think, that maybe it is too late for him, but you feel like he's just in such incredible form over the past couple of years, and goalies can play for a while.
Yeah.
You just feel like, what's this guy got to do? Because he's just incredible, and he seems deserving of a U.S. call-up, and like you said, at the penalty spot.
Yeah.
His percentages are getting up there. I mean, it's right there with Nick Raimondo, who's, you know,
yeah.
Well known for his penalty stopping ability.
Yeah, I mean, he's 32 years old, Tim Melia, and I don't know why that is considered too late. I mean, maybe just because he wasn't on the radar when he was younger, but for, like you said, for a 32's old, if you're a midfielder, if you're a goalkeeper, it's not that advanced. It really isn't.
No, I mean, so that puts him, what, 35 at the next World Cup?
Yeah.
He could do that, and I understand. Listen, Zach Steffen is fantastic, and he seems to be the goalkeeper for the future, but you need other goalkeepers there, and I just don't see how you can put Sean Johnson ahead of Tim Melia, even though Sean Johnson's coming off a fantastic performance this past weekend as well. I just don't see it. I really don't. So, you know, we're biased here in that regard. But, man, Melia comes up big again. It's incredible, and that was a huge moment in the match.
Now, we're glad that that he's in Kansas City. There's no doubt about that. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we plan to sit down with Roger Espinoza of Sporting Kansas City. This is the Sporting Kansas City Show. Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, or wherever you download your podcasts. Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine, and we are joined now by Sporting KC midfielder Roger Espinoza. Roger, how are you, man? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
You had to sit there and watch that Philadelphia Union game, but it's been a whirlwind up until that point. You feeling a little rested and ready, probably chomping at the bit to get back out there now?
Yeah, it was nice to have a little break. But at the same time, it kind of sucks watching new teammates run around out there and play. But, hey, I'm glad it's, you know, we were able to win the game. And, you know, now, like you say, I'm all rested up and ready to go again.
What is it like watching the game from up in the box, and what'd you make of maybe the midfield, that how they played against Philadelphia?
First of all, it's very tough watching from up there because you have no control. When you're in the game, at least you have control of some parts of the game. But you know, I thought the midfield did really well. You know, Puccio being there for the first time this year in league, and you know, I thought he did very well. Came close to scoring a goal. Was able to combine with Ili a lot. So is Felipe, and you know, Ili we know is always very powerful, and against every team he's played this year and last year so far. So he's done very well for us. So you know, our midfield has continued to you know, to battle other midfielders.
You touched on Busio. He became the youngest player to ever start a game at Children's Mercy Park at 16 years old. You go up against him in training on a day-in, day-out basis. I'm sure you help bring him along, too, as a leader on this team. Tell us about him a little bit. What impresses you when you're with him in training? And, I don't know, just maybe give us an insight to what he's like as a player and a pro.
You know, one of the things that I like the best is how humble he is on the field. You know, he has his humbleness. You know, we say a lot of humble confidence in our team, and he has that. He has that, you know, he's willing to learn and he's willing to go through the process, and I mean, I have no doubt he's going to be one of the best midfielders in this league very soon. Very soon, you know, he's a great player if he keeps going the way he's doing right now, working hard. You know, when he gets the chance, he shows it. We saw it in Panama. You know, I thought, you know, we couldn't figure out a little bit of the game. He came in and opened up the field really well for everybody, and, you know, got the game going in a positive way. You could see here he's very hungry to succeed in the game. You know, he was getting in the box and almost was close to scoring a lot. And he draw the PK, you know. So it's a lot of positive stuff from his side. And hey, being 16, I don't know what I was doing at 16, hanging out with my high school friend. So, you know, he's a very mature guy, and it's a lot of positive things, you know, that he has coming his way, and I believe that he not only going to help Sporting in the future, but also, he's already doing it in the present as we speak, and, you know, but in the future, I feel like he's going to be amazing and help soccer in this country too.
Well, you talked about that, the game down in Panama a little bit. It's been a pretty hectic start to the season. Where do you think the team is at, having played so many games to start a season in such a short period of time?
You know, I felt like after that Panama game, we were a little winded. You know, we were a little tired from all the traveling. But at the same time, it's not an excuse. You know, we need to get ourselves back together. We came home. We were able to sleep in our own bed, come to our own facility, recover with all the equipment we have here. And, you know, right before the Philadelphia game on Saturday, I could see everybody feeling well. You know, I could see everybody feeling good and got their win back. They rested. They saw their family, and you know, I have no doubt that on Sunday we're going to go out and win. And now everybody's feeling great, and we're back at it again.
For people like Carter and myself, we've never had the chance to get to travel to a competition like the CONCACAF Champions League. You've been through a lot of international competitions, but I really enjoyed seeing all the different venues, such different stadiums between Toluca and LA, and then going to a small little stadium in Panama. As a player, do you enjoy the wide variety that you get from a competition like the Champions League?
I love it. You know, it's tough, but at the same time, you get to see, like you're saying, you get to go, you know, you see the fans, very humble fans in Toluca, you know, their own little culture out there. and then you go to LA, and then you go all the way to Panama, and you get to see people enjoying soccer at its best there. And you see, you know, the, from the team being a very small team, and not a lot of resources, you can see, but they make the best out of it, and they enjoy playing soccer, and that just makes you happy because you want the world to be great, you know. And we, from the drive from the hotel all the way to the stadium in Panama, it's just that feeling, you know, you do it for this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fun. You, at one point, you were like them, you know, and you're trying to make it to MLS, or you're trying to make it to other leagues in the world, and they're a very competitive team and very good team. And, you know, things like that, you know, that you live for, and that's why you play soccer. And I liked it, just that I was a bit tired, but just from the traveling, I don't think any team in the world pretty much does that, or any league in the world. You go from here and you have to go 7 hours down to Central America, south of Central America. So it's a very unique opportunity, but some one that you will enjoy in the long run later on.
So the field itself, you know, you guys, we get a chance to watch you on such a consistent basis, the way you guys zip the ball around with your one-touch passes and you just scoot it across the ground. We know you guys like a fast surface. Watching that game in Panama, it looked like there were several different times where you guys would go for one of those one-touch passes and the ball would just die on that turf about 5 feet from you, maybe 5 feet short of where you're trying to get it. How hard was that to adjust to when you're out there playing in a different surface than what you're used to?
It was very difficult. It was very difficult. I think, you know, I put a lot of blame in myself. You know, not being able right away to figure out, hey, this is not going to work. I need to change everything. But, you know, we have a style of play here.
Yeah.
And we live in that style, you know. So we want to keep going with that. It didn't work a little bit, but, hey, at least I thought we got the goal there and we can come home and play the way we want to play. And that's how it is. Everybody got their home field advantage. You know, we went to Toluca in the altitude, and right away we were able to figure out how it feels. You know, in Panama, it took us a while, and I think it was because of all the traveling stuff. And now, you know, we're at home, and we need to do it our own way. But, like I said, it was very tough playing on that field, but it's the way it goes. Everybody has their own field advantage, and that was theirs.
Did you guys learn anything about that Independiente team from the first leg that you maybe didn't know? I know you alluded to it, and we've heard it from coaches as well, that they're a team that has a lot of hunger because, like you said, they're at this stage in their careers where they're trying to move up. Was there anything else that you learned about them from that first leg that you can take into Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, I knew they were very fast. I mean, they were fast in the counter, but I know how quick they are, and they go fast. And, you know, we learned that from them. And they're very good players. You know, individually, some guys at top are very skillful guys. And, you know, seeing on TV is not the same when you play teams. You know, you sometimes go to places knowing that the tendencies, you know, of a team or of a player, and then completely you get there and they completely do something else, and you're like, oh, okay, well, it's kind of like that, you know. So now playing them again gives you a sense of who they are, because we had never played this team before, and especially we've never seen the league. At least we watch the Mexican league all the time, so you know their style of play. Panamanian league, you know, it's not often on TV, so it's very hard to see them. And but now we got a feel for them, and hopefully it goes well here at home.
Yeah, the pace just jumps out at you when we were watching the game with Brownie and Ive. Those guys could fly. But I also was impressed watching them in their home game against Toronto and against Sporting Kansas City. Their back line and their two holding midfielders seemed to be very difficult to break down. What impressed you about maybe that side of the equation for Independiente?
They're a very well-coached team. You know, they might not be a very possessive team, but they know exactly what they want. And when they go, when they're a direct team, they know how to do it very well, and they know how to make their runs. And, you know, they know each other very. It feels like they've been playing for a long time. And it might be the field. They know that field really well. And usually when you go to places where teams have turf fields around the league, it usually makes it difficult for guys who play on natural grass most of the time, because they know the field really well. They train there. They know the bounces. They know where to make the run. And guys just put the ball there, and they know exactly how it's going to bounce and where they're going to go. And it looked like they knew that field really well. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to do here in Sporting. But one thing I do know, they're a very dynamic team. And when they go forward, they go forward. So we got to be ready for that and get allocated and organize ourselves tactically very well.
Yeah, let's talk about that home field advantage, and you guys have the away goal. What do you think that does for the team? Does it mean you don't really have to rush and put bodies forward so early in the game? You can really play your game at home?
Yeah. The great thing, you know, when we come home is our fans. Our fans, you know, we're in front of our people, and I know they're going to be there in a positive way for us, so that makes it a lot better for us. You know, we just got to play our game the way we know how to play. And one thing I'd say, we didn't play the way we do in Panama, even though we had the difficulties at the field. But, hey, so did they. You know, at the same time, there's no excuse for that. They won the game 2-1. They did really well. They played better than us, and they deserve to go up 2-1. And now we're at home and in front of our home fans and everybody, and we know our field really well, and we need to be able to, you know, just take it one goal at a time. We don't have to go rush. It's a 90-minute game, and, you know, we just had to play a game and try to figure it out the way they come out.
You heard it from Roger right there. You guys, you make a difference when you're at the game. So if you don't have tickets already, make sure you get them. 888-4KC-GOAL. The phone number, sportingkc.com or SeatGeek. You can find your tickets and get there on Thursday night to help Sporting KC try to get to the semifinals of this competition for the first time ever. And it was a rough week last week for the MLS sides. The other teams are in worse shape than you guys are in that regard. Are you paying attention to the rest of the competition? You watching all these other games?
Yeah, I have. I mean, it's difficult because they have to go away and they lost at home. So, but you know, at the same time, it's now they can go and score away goals and you know, try to come back in the game. But you know, I believe us playing at home, it gives an advantage more than they have it. You know, Atlanta, I think, lost 3-0, right?
Yeah.
And Houston was.
They lost 2-0.
2-0. 2-0 in New York was the same. 2-0, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit difficult, and you know, I like where we're at. You know, get to come home with our fans. But you know, we all lost, so we all got to go against the odds in this far. But you know, we're ready. I have no idea how the other teams feel about it, but you know, we're ready and we're ready to go because we want to get as far as we can on this stage.
You guys are in good shape. You're like you said, you're in position. You go out, you win this game on Thursday, and because of that away goal, you're in great position to move through to the next round. So we wish you the best of luck, and then you get to kind of go back home too because you go to Colorado on Sunday, right?
There you go. I know when to get my red cards.
Roger Espinosa will be rested and ready on Thursday night. We hope to see you there. Roger, thanks a lot for the time, man. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Okay, that is Roger Espinosa. Back after this on the Sporting Kansas City Show. The Sporting Kansas City Show continues right here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Our thanks to Roger Espinosa for joining us on the show. And now we've got an opportunity to get to know one of the real VIPs, one of the real important players for Sporting Kansas City. And as I said earlier, you probably hear his name a lot. Players reference him when we do interviews and stuff. But I think as a Sporting KC fan, you're going to want to get to know this guy a little bit if you don't already. His name is Mateus Manuel, Director of Sports Performance and Science for Sporting Kansas City. They call him Mate. What do you prefer to be called when people talk to you, man?
I got 30 different versions, but Mate works for me.
Okay. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's exciting to talk to you. So let's maybe help our listeners get to know you a little bit. Originally from Brazil. Where in Brazil are you originally from?
I'm born in the south of the country, Londrina area. It's a pretty rural kind of area. It reminds me a lot of Kansas City, to be honest.
Okay.
It's not a big city. But I went to high school and lived most of my years in São Paulo, which is a huge, huge city in Brazil. It's probably 20, 21 million people now. So, I moved to the U.S. back in 99 to go to college. I went to Maryland for undergrad. And eventually did grad school up at George Washington University in the same downtown D.C. So,
you told me what I think is an incredible story about how you first got your foot in the door in MLS. It was with D.C. United, correct?
That's it.
Okay,
yeah.
So tell me about how you got involved with those guys.
Well, you know, if you think about the league back in 2006, 2007, and you looked at what, you know, we call medical and performance. Performance includes, you know, the strength and conditioning coaches, the nutritionists, and the medical side. You have the athletic trainers, you have the chiropractors, you have the doctors, right? You got so many pieces within those two, what we call silos within soccer. And I went to talk to DC because I was interested in working with soccer. And at the time, I was in grad school finishing up my strength and conditioning certifications and my studies in exercise physiology and biomechanics. And I knocked on the door and I asked, I said, do you guys have a fitness coach or a strength and conditioning coach? And at the time, the athletic trainer looked at me and he said, no, you're looking at him. I kind of do it all. You know, I'm wearing 30 hats in here. And that's because at the time it was literally him and a part-time massage guy. And they had no other support from what we, you know, call physical nowadays, which, you know, there's so many moving parts to keeping an athlete healthy. And at the time you got one body taking care of everything: nutrition, rehab, training, warm-ups, cool downs, gym work. The guy's doing it all. So he looks at me and he's like, well, if you want to, you can totally come, but I got $0 for you. And I joined DC in the 2007 season, and basically would go there in the mornings and help out with the team and whatever I could. And, you know, it kind of started with me just being integrated into the technical staff, and I would do warm-ups. I would work with some players on the side, on the field, and then eventually take them to the gym and do some gym work. But that was it. I would leave around 1 o'clock, go to school until 6, 7 at night, and repeat the whole thing the next day. So that was my involvement with DC, and that's how I got my foot in the door. Eventually, players started noticing that they liked the type of work that was happening there. And, you know, the rest and where I went from there is a pretty interesting story, because essentially in the 2008 season, in the middle of the year, that same trainer that had offered me this position to volunteer gets a call, and this call is coming from essentially Exos, which used to be called Athletes Performance. They work with high-profile NHL, NFL, Major League Baseball athletes in various locations in the U.S., and they had made a deal with the Mexican Federation. At the time, if you remember back to in the qualifiers to South Africa, Sven Eriksson was the head coach. This was a very famous Swedish coach. Mm-hmm. He had coached England, and he was coming to Mexico to try to save the boat because Mexico was not doing very well. And at the time, Carlos Vela, Giovanni Dos Santos, all these players were 17, 18-year-olds, and they were coming up through the system. And Sven wanted to bring American-style strength and conditioning, physical training, etc., to Mexico. He wanted to bring this different philosophy. And he contacted this company. The company literally did a search through the U.S., and they were looking for professionals in the strength and conditioning environment that had worked in soccer and knew how to speak Spanish fluently. I happened to be that only guy. So my name came up, and the next thing you know, I go from volunteering as a 26-year-old with DC United to work with the first team in the Mexico national soccer system with all these fabulous players. Andres Guardado, Cinha, Rafa Márquez was still there. We had high-caliber players. And Sven Eriksson was trying to instill an European, American-ish, kind of different philosophy in the with the team, and I got to be a part of that, and that was awesome experience. A little bit of a feel where I felt like I was thrown in the fire, because it was big. It was some big shoes for me to fill as a young coach, but I coped with it, and I had so much fun with those guys. I still keep up with communication with them to this date, and it was a great part of my development. So I was there for almost a year and a half.
Now, what was that like? Maybe compare it to coming into the DC United team kind of out of nowhere, like you said, and then going into this Mexican team. What was that like when you first step off the plane in Mexico?
You know, it is a lot of pressure. It is very turbulent in terms of the emotions and what the fans and the media and the players and the federation. There are so many moving parts to what that structure actually looks like. And for you to come in there You know, my dad always tells me this. He says that if there were to be a world war or some nuclear war, right, only certain things would survive. And the things that would survive are the things that would be able to adapt. Adapt to the environment, to the climate, to whatever it might be. Those are the things that survive. And he said, essentially, that's how I felt in there. I felt like I was in a nuclear war zone. And I had to figure out how to survive. Good for me, because as a child, I had a lot of experiences of moving to different places. You know, my dad was an economist. He worked with the World Bank. We traveled the world, and we lived in the U.S. a couple times. So I had to adapt to different cultures and understand different languages and see how people lived and breathed, etc. So for me, it was easier to be in that environment as a Brazilian national, living in Mexico, working with Mexican players, trying to adapt and instill a American philosophy of how to train fitness. So I had to deal with a lot of different things. But, you know, I love that type of environment. I love the high pressure. I love to deal with it. I'm very competitive in nature. Just naturally I am like that. So for me, it was great. And I lived and breathed it every day here in sporting. It's the same way. There's nothing different about it. It's just a different environment.
Not that Mate needs my testimony to his competitive nature, but I've been on the field in an over 30 league environment with Mate. And you better pack a lunch when you're playing against Mate, because he's going to bring. It doesn't matter if it's over 30 league or not. I'll tell you that much.
Serious,
right there.
Serious.
So you're with the Mexican national team in advance of South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But when the South Africa World Cup rolls around, you're on the bench or in the stands with the United States.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I don't know if it has to do with the border, but I'll be honest with you. Sven Eriksson got let go after a game we lost, I believe in Honduras, and the Mexican Federation got scared at the moment, thinking that we might not qualify. We have to make a change now. So Sven got let go, and with Sven, as you know, in pro sports, everything goes. So I went back to L.A., where the training center for this company I was working at the time for was located. And, you know, we had played the U.S. team a couple times in the qualifiers, and Bob Bradley was the coach at the time, and he knew I was with the Mexican staff. We would see each other every now and then in this gym back in L.A., and when he heard that I was basically done with Mexico, I was literally working out in the gym one day. He's running on the treadmill, and we start chatting. We start talking. I knew the head fitness coach for the U.S. Soccer Federation at the time, Pierre Barriou, who was a fitness coach for many years for the U.S., especially during the golden era with Bruce, when, you know, they went all the way to the quarterfinals back in Korea, right? And here I am just sitting there, and he's like, hey, maybe you should come with us. We need an assistant to help out with the team. We're going to be gone for so long, and this is perfect timing. I mean, let's go. And I said, let's go. Next thing you know, we're down in Princeton, and we're prepping for the World Cup. And that was an unbelievable experience. Again, here I am, 27, 28 years old, going to a World Cup and working with, you know, Michael Bradley's of the world and Tim Howard's of the world and getting to watch the beautiful game in the middle of the jungle in Africa. It was great.
So this stuff's crazy to me, because going back to DC United, and they didn't even really have what you do in
yeah.
place.
Yeah.
Have you found that it's accelerated in soccer? I feel like you can watch tapes of guys, you know, smoking cigarettes back in the, you know, in the yeah. 90s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's kind of exploded your line of work with
yeah,
soccer?
It has.
And then, okay, in that sense, what's it like being kind of on the forefront of that?
Well, I feel very fortunate to be working in a time where there is this explosion, right? People are more worried now about injuries. They're more worried about health. They're more worried about dollars that we spend and throw out in the trash for every day a player is not on the field, right? There's a business around it. And with that business comes the pressure of keeping these guys on the field. And we know from a health and a fitness perspective that if you're not eating right, if you're not sleeping right, if you're not training right, if you're not psychologically right, if you're not doing certain things to make sure that your body is prepared to deal with the demands, not only of the soccer game, but the demands of the model of play that the coach is pushing the players to do, right? Because every coach has a different style. Therefore, for every team a player goes play for, he's going to have to deal with different demands. So if they're not ready, they're going to get hurt. And if they get hurt, the club loses money. If the club loses money, the pressure comes on me, right? So it's all related. And it's great to be a part of this movement of focusing so much on player health and fitness and nutrition and preparation, because players aren't just players anymore. Players are literally machines, and they must be treated as such. You don't buy a Ferrari and take it to a crappy dealer on the side of the street. You take your Ferrari to a Ferrari dealer because they got the right oil, they got the right machines, they're going to do the things that that car needs to do to perform on race day. And that's how we look at our athletes. They're literally high-performing machines.
It's crazy to me to think just what light speed the change has been, too, because you're talking 2006. We're not talking 1976.
No, 10 years, babe. 10 years.
But I want to go back to South Africa for just a second, because that was, to me, one of the big moments in U.S. soccer that really started an explosion of fans in the mainstream watching. And one of the biggest goals in the history of the U.S. men's national team, that goal by Landon Donovan to get them through the group stage. Take me back to that. Were you in the stadium for that? And were you in the post-game celebration? What was that all like?
To be honest, I blacked out. That was an unbelievable moment, not only for fans, but for us as a staff, because there's so much on the line, you know, and we're coming in as underdogs, and it's the U.S. team. We tie the game against England, which was huge, right? We get to that game, and now you score a goal in the critical moment of the game. There's so much emotion involved in that. So, yeah, to answer your question, I was in the stands pretty much behind where the coaches and the subs are, the benches. And I just remember jumping like a crazy man and just literally going back to my years when I was a little kid, jumping around with my dad when we would celebrate goals at the stadium. When you are – the interesting thing about being on the technical side always to me is how close you are to the game without being in the game.
Yeah.
Right? Because – I think about all the sacrifices I make in my personal life with the travel time, with my wife and my kids, and how much they have to endure, right, for me to do what I do. It's a lot that I put on the line, a lot that I put on the line. And when those moments happen, it's an explosion. It's an explosion because there is value to that sacrifice. And when you reach certain things or you win a trophy or you win an important game, dude, there's nothing better than that. And that's why I do what I do. I have such a passion for that moment that I'm willing to do anything for it. So,
were there any celebrities celebrating after the game with you guys or anything like that?
Yeah, we had a couple couple celebrities, if you want to call Bill Clinton one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was in the post game with you guys?
Yeah, he came down to the locker room and he was taking some pictures and running around with us. We had a blast with the guy. I mean, I'm not sure how much he knows about soccer, but that day he learned a couple things.
Yeah.
And he was living it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible. We're visiting with Mateus Manuel. He is Sporting Kansas City's Director of Sports Performance and Science. So let's take it present day now.
Yeah.
You mentioned all the things you have to do. In particular, this start of the season, you had to put together a training program to get ready to start the season early, to start the season at altitude, to travel to three different countries and four time zones in the span of a week, all that stuff. How do you do it? I mean, you're not going to be able to explain it to us in a short amount of time, but maybe give us a little thumbnail on just what this preseason and start of the season has been like for you and your staff.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, and a lot of people take a short-term approach to looking at this time and this period, and they think, what do you do now? Well, it's not so much what we do now. It's what we've been doing, right, since the off-season time into the preseason time, which – to be honest with you. We've probably pushed the guys from a physical and training perspective more than we've ever pushed them before. In the 10 years that I've been here, this has to be the hardest preseason we've had with our group. And not only because it was an accelerated version of what we usually do, right? Guys were playing 30 minutes within 4 days of arriving in Arizona. Yeah. For our first week of preseason. So that typically doesn't happen until 7 days or maybe 10 days in a normal preseason. The fact that we also finished late last year and our guys literally only had 2 or 3 weeks of time off, it gave us the opportunity to use the base that they still have from the season and kind of push it into this season. The fact that we had players with very strong culture, training culture, that adhered to the off-season programs, did the runs, did the lifts, and showed up in good enough shape for us to start the preseason the way we did, that's another factor. The fact that we were down in Arizona in a great training complex, a great training situation where guys were able to, you know, put the intensity that we require out of them in the sessions, that also helped. The fact that we slept in altitude tents for 3 weeks preceding that first Toluca game, that also helped. Albuquerque, training at some altitude, so the guys feel what it's like to breathe and breathe and breathe with, you know, 5,000 feet under them. Well, that's another factor. The fact that we supplemented them with iron, for example, throughout the whole period. A lot of people don't know, why am I taking iron? Well, you need iron to produce red blood cells. If you don't have that, it doesn't happen. The physiology doesn't help you when you get to altitude. So there are so many details that I could go through a list of 100 things that we did, but ultimately it's the culmination of all those factors that gave us what we needed to go into a trip like this. And yeah, sure, you charter, right? You charter, it's easier. You stay in nice hotels, it's easier. We try to make everything, the environment, to be as rich as possible for them so that when the time comes and the whistle blows, they're ready to play the game. So the details are the details. Kind of proprietary. We like to keep them in-house because, yep, yep. You know, it's what makes us who we are. But like I said, it's like Ferraris, and you need to prep them like Ferraris. And that's why we stay at the nice resorts. We take the nice planes. Ultimately, it comes back to basics. You need to be able to train hard. You need to be able to train smart. And you need to be able to show up in the right mindset that is a competitive mindset. And this is where Peter and his vision comes in, where guys are ready to give everything they have on game day, and the psychology behind it, that's something else that, you know, is also a part of it. But we have a great group, a great culture, and that helps too, because the locker room is very strong this year. Yeah. Well,
you talk about proprietary things and and Ferraris, and we're sitting in maybe something that's like a spaceship here at Pinnacle. Yeah. We've gotten a chance to talk to a lot of the guys over the past year since we've been here, and obviously they're blown away, impressed. Just had Gideon Zalalem come in from Arsenal and say, "This is even more."
Yeah.
For your position, I have to imagine it's been a huge difference.
Yeah.
What, without giving away the secret sauce, what has Pinnacle done for you?
Well, I'll be honest with you. The feeling you get when you go to Disney World for the first time, it's kind of the feeling you get when you come in here for the first time, for me as a trainer, because this is kind of Disney World for trainers. We have everything we need, anything we want, everything I ever dreamed of in a facility is in here. Part of it comes down to the fact that I also helped design the facility, so it helps there. But everybody that comes in here is blown away. Now, there's my personal opinion on the whole thing is that, yeah, is this needed for optimal performance, for high performance? Yeah, sure it is. But again, it doesn't work unless you have the fundamentals. And the fundamentals come down to preparation, training, putting your heart out, sweating, falling, getting up. You need that to be able to succeed with this type of environment. This alone does not give you what we have at Sporting today. And it comes down, it really truly comes down to that combination of doing the fundamentals right. And to be honest, if we were in the middle of a park, in the middle of nowhere, and we didn't have anything, then guess what? We would still train the same way. Now, I don't have the cool machines. I can't put guys through cryotherapy and help them recover. I don't have access to the pneumatic machines that we have downstairs to train power. But can we still make it happen? Sure we can. This just maximizes it. And like I said, go back to the Ferrari. Are you going to take the Ferrari to the local shop, or are you taking them to the actual Ferrari shop? Well, this is the Ferrari shop. Mm-hmm. Now, we got good people in here. We have the best staff in the league to make things tick, because at the end of the day, all this infrastructure isn't worth anything unless you have the right personnel driving it.
Yeah.
So that's what we have here. Like I said, it's not just one thing that makes it happen. It's this culture, and it's this combination of factors that makes the team be what they are on game day.
Well, I got about 70 more questions. Yeah. So we're going to have to bring you back in a little bit later this season, if that's all right with you.
Do oh, totally.
Does that work? Okay,
always.
Good. Because
yeah.
I have so many things I want to ask you about, but and I'm going to tell our listeners right now, if you're listening to this on Sports Radio 810, we had to trim this interview down a little bit to fit it into the window of time. But on the podcast, you can listen to the entire conversation we just had with Mateus Manuel. You're going to want to hear the whole thing. You just got a snippet of it on the radio. So make sure you download the podcast, iTunes, Spotify, Sports Radio 810WHB.com, and check the whole thing out, because you'll want to hear it. Mate, I will say this as well. You're one of those type of people listening to you talk, like it gets a couple lazy guys like me and Carter want to get up and run around a little bit, so we can see how you can motivate the players. Yeah. It's great talking to you. Thanks a lot for the time.
It's a pleasure, guys. Anytime. Thank you.
That is Mateus Manuel. We'll take a break. We'll be back to wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting KC Show right after this. Back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati and Carter Augustine with you. And, of course, we appreciate you listening however you might be listening, on Sports Radio 810 Live, or listening to the Sports Radio 810 WHB app on the podcast, or Spotify, iTunes, all the places you can get your podcast action going. And, Carter, as we wrap things up here, let's take a look at what lies ahead for Sporting Kansas City right now. The busy month of March continues. Thursday night, 7 o'clock, Sporting Kansas City against Independiente La Chorrera. Sporting KC come into this game down 2-1 on aggregate. They do have that away goal in their back pocket. How does that change things? That away goal, even if they're down by one, how does that change things in your mind for Sporting as they go into this game on Thursday?
I think it's big, mostly because they don't have to commit themselves forward in a reckless manner. And then also when or if they are chasing a goal already, but if late in the game they need to press themselves forward, they can afford to. You know, you don't want to concede a goal, but we saw how quick those wingers are. Mm-hmm. If Independiente do get a goal, it's not the end of the world. It's then you just have to get two goals. So I think that's the biggest difference. I don't know about you, but it's a bigger it's much worse, obviously, if they didn't get the goal down there. Independiente comes up, gets a goal, and that means the multipliers come in. You're going to have to score probably three, you know, four goals at that time. So
yeah.
It's big in that regard.
Yeah, and I think that your first point is a really well-taken one, which is that, you know, the thing that make Independiente most dangerous, particularly you have to figure when they're away from home, is the pace of their wingers on the counterattack. If you throw your numbers completely forward, just selling all out to get goals, you can expose yourself a little bit to the pace of those players, Brownie and Ive in particular, who hurt Sporting Kansas City quite a bit down in Panama. When you're only down a goal and you have the away goal tiebreaker in your back pocket, I think you can afford to just go play the game.
Yeah.
Dominate with possession. We expect Sporting Kansas City to have a good 70% of the ball or more, I would think, in this game. And you don't have to panic and just try to do everything you can to pile up the goals early. A 1-0 result gets you through. So you just play your game. you trust that by playing that game, you're going to get yourself at least a goal in this one. I think Toronto had 28 shots. They only scored one, but they should have scored many more in that game against Independiente when they had them at home. I think Sporting's a better team than Toronto, particularly on their home field. The surface is going to be in much better shape than that beach that we saw up in Toronto where the sand was kicking everywhere. So I think Sporting's going to be able to play much more of their game this time around than they did down in Torreira.
Yeah, that's a great point. They don't have to rush themselves to get goals early on. Like you said, they've got the full game. They just need the one goal as it stands. And the 28 shots, like you mentioned, that's huge. And then that's also a good reference for fans to look back at. Toronto didn't score in Panama. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they got crushed, so they're having to chase goals. But then once Independiente hit them on the counter, it was a trash goal on the counter, mm-hmm. and that meant Toronto's got to get to six. And so that just pretty much effectively, even though they were getting all types of shots, they had 28 in the game. That you could have seen them maybe, you know, winning 4-0 and sending it to extra time if they're able to convert those chances. But with them not getting an away goal, it meant that once Independiente got the one goal, it was the nail in the coffin for Toronto.
Okay, that game again is at 7:00 on Thursday night. By the way, if you're looking to come to a Sporting KC game, this is a good opportunity because the tickets are a little more readily available for a CCL game than they are for a regular season MLS game. So SportingKC.com, SeatGeek. Jump on there and get some tickets because this is a big game. I think that the players will tell you this is every bit as big as any regular season game they can play because they have a chance to get to the semifinals for the first time ever in this competition.
Yeah, they have the chance to get to the semifinals, and they have the best chance of any MLS team. We've got a couple games tonight, I believe. And then the
late tonight, 8:00 and 10:00.
Yep, and then the one tomorrow is the one that I believe Sporting will play the winner of Atlanta and Monterrey, and you have to figure that Monterrey, with the late work they did in the first leg, that they're they've got one foot in the semifinals. What a matchup that would be against a Monterrey side that is just full of talent and a wonderful stadium down there. And the semifinals, if they can get through, would be fantastic. So you have a chance to come Thursday, watch the quarterfinal with that on the line. The first time in club history to get to the semifinals. I just love CONCA champions. Yeah. I mean, it's just a wonderful competition. I think if you come, you'll be watching this kid Brownie, who should be in MLS in the very soon future.
Yep.
If not, you know, Liga MX or another ascending league from Liga Panama, because he's a player. And so it's going to be a really intriguing matchup and a really good game in a competition that Sporting is trying to win and should be carrying the flag for MLS in this year's competition anyways.
Yeah, I'll say they're the only team that has a really legitimate chance of advancing to the semifinals. Unfortunately, the other MLS teams really took it on the chin against those Mexican sides last week. Maybe one of them pulls off a miracle.
Maybe.
We'll have to wait and
maybe
see. Like you said, tonight both New York Red Bulls and Houston Dynamo will be in action, and then tomorrow
they seem the least likely, right? Because they got crushed at home.
Yes.
They have to go on the road and do something really miraculous, whereas Atlanta, they'll be at home. They haven't really looked the same, and Monterrey is just way too good of a team. So I still think Monterrey will be able to see it. But
there seems to be a lot of negativity inside the Mercedes-Benz Arena right now as well. So it'll be interesting to see Frank DeBoer calling his fans spoiled, which doesn't always it doesn't always endear yourself to the home side. You guys are spoiled. You expect too much. So we'll see how that, you know, how they respond to that. But they have the talent and the firepower, and they're at home. So maybe they do still have a chance there. And then Carter, Sporting Kansas City back in MLS play on Sunday in Colorado, a very new-look Colorado Rapids team. What are you looking forward to most out of that game?
Well, first of all, it'll be the last game for SKC, and then they get the international break, mm-hmm. and that even takes into consideration if they do advance, they still don't have to play during the week. So I think it'll be a big-time rest after that for this team. It's going to – I mean, I think I'm looking forward to do the same as every Sporting fan, seeing Kai Kamara, Benny Failhaber, Diego Rubio on a Rapids team that plays a really similar formation to what we saw from the Philadelphia Union this past week, and they've been – going with the diamond in midfield. So it's going to be really curious. And Sporting, it's a Western Conference team, so I think they'll be really having their eyes on those 3 points. And you saw a little bit of the blueprint against Philadelphia, how they can do that.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Remember, you can listen to Thursday night's game on our sister station, ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Myself and Carter will be on the call of that CONCACAF Champions League game on Thursday night. And then, of course, you can listen to and watch Sporting KC against the Colorado Rapids on Sunday at 8 o'clock on Fox Sports Kansas City and on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. So for Roger Espinoza, Mateus Manuel, and Carter Augustine, this is Nate Bucati saying thanks for listening to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. 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 Sporting Kansas City Show.